From the state capitol in Springfield, this is the program State Week in Review.
I'm Rich Bradley. On Thursday, the Illinois General Assembly failed to complete all of the work of the fall veto session and extended its efforts for at least one additional day, as some hitches developed in finding the key to resolving a couple of issues not really related to veto activity. We'll talk about some of those issues with our panel members today. Jack Vanderslick, director of the Illinois Legislative Studies Center at Sangamon State University. Dave Everson, professor of political studies at SSU. In our State House Bureau, Bill Miller, director of the Public Affairs Reporting Program at Sangamon State. Mary Frances Fagan, State House Bureau Chief for WSSR. And our guest today is Craig Delamore, legislative correspondent for WBBM News Radio 78 in Chicago. And Craig, it's been a while since you've been with us. Welcome back.
Well, thank you very much. It's fun to be back.
Let's identify the issues that ran the fall veto session into overtime, if you all allow me to use that terminology. Mary Frances?
Oh, Rich. Sports-related issues. We need a new home for the Chicago White Sox, and we also need to help out the financially ailing horse racing industry in Illinois.
It's interesting to me you use the word need in both cases.
Well, I don't think anyone will deny the fact that the White Sox are staying in a stadium that is old. It's the oldest one in the American League, I believe. Also, the horse racing industry has been hurt substantially from a number of factors. One of them is the fact that Illinois has a very high parimutuel tax, higher than most other states. The other is that Arlington Park racetracks, stadium, and grandstand facilities burned down in July of 1985, and without that premier track to get horses to come to Illinois, the parimutuel fund and other funds are depleting as far as revenues, and those funds go to pay for such things as county fairs and the like, and so there's a need to rebuild that horse racing industry.
I don't disagree with the fact that the horse racing industry is of vital interest to the state of Illinois. Let me play devil's advocate and say, suggest that the legislature has no business fooling around with professional baseball or football or whatever.
Well, Rich, I think there are a lot of lawmakers who would probably agree with you, but to quote some of them, we're also talking about economic development, and in the cases of both horse racing and, more to the point, baseball, these are things that draw people and the money that they spend to Illinois. And in fact, some lawmakers have suggested that while we spent a lot of last year talking about building Illinois and spending millions and millions of dollars for economic development, if there's anything that qualifies as economic development, these things should have been it. So there are reasons to do it. The debate is not coming over whether these things should be done, but rather how they should be done and who should be paying for them.
Are the downstaters screaming, "What's in it for us?"
Well, I think downstaters are asking that question, but the other question that comes to mind is, what do they want? And I haven't heard them saying, we want this, that, or the other thing. Now, downstaters will benefit from the horse racing bill. I mean, there are breeders throughout central Illinois and southern Illinois who will do well if they can, if racing picks up in the state, they can breed more animals and the like. And then there are a few of us who are downstate White Sox fans who will very much benefit from keeping the White Sox in Chicago.
And, of course, a portion of that tax money goes into the agricultural premium fund to help county fairs throughout the state.
Well, the racing.
For horse racing, yeah. I mean, there's not a heck of a lot of direct benefit from the White Sox. That's more of a moral victory, if it's anything. There's no way to portray the Chicago White Sox as anything but a Chicago interest. And that's going to cost it some votes, but it also gives it some votes.
Well, once they get their foot in that door, and I'm talking about the White Sox right now, don't they, in effect, get that door open enough to help out the Chicago Cubs if they come down, or the Chicago Bears?
That's the argument. Early Friday morning, we were seeing news reports that indicated the Bears owner, Mike McCaskey, may be interested in seeking some state help in either constructing a new stadium for the Bears in Chicago along the lakefront, or doing something to Soldier Field. I'm not quite sure what exactly he's got in mind. And the argument is, what happens when Wrigley Field is too small?
They're already saying it is. And I think the one thing that we have to remember is, I think it has been, if my memory serves me correct, since about the 20s when a stadium was built without government help. So we're not talking about starting a new trend here. We're talking, if anything, about continuing one. Stadiums are more expensive to build, and the people who build them, while they may have the money to do them by themselves, are aware that they're making an investment in an area. And they like to see some demonstration of support for that from the localities. It's a bidding war. It's almost like trying to get a free agent, and they're making money on that.
Well, if the White Sox were to move to another state, it's presumed that part of the deal that would be offered them by another location would be a new stadium, and likely built by a municipality. So, I mean, it's not something totally new. The question I have is, it's too bad we're talking about an isolated single stadium for the White Sox when next year we may be talking about additional help for the Bears and possibly the Cubs at some point down the line. You know, Chicago will never be able to hold a Super Bowl without a dome stadium of any kind. And I mean, I guess I'm of the opinion that it's too bad we can't get all the forces together to come up with a couple of some neat big mammoth stadium for football and baseball that, you know, could really make Chicago stand out.
It is probably a shame, but there's a long-standing tradition of rivalry among the Chicago sports teams that will not erode to the point of their cooperating in our lifetimes, and I think that's something that's a reality that the lawmakers are just going to have to deal with. The governor has kind of shrugged at that problem himself, but he's also aware of the problem that we're going to see the other teams come down and ask for money, ask for help. And so what he was hoping to do was to craft this agreement, this plan, as sort of a model where the state's not really kicking in too much money. The $5 million state subsidy that they would have to come up with to match the city's $5 million subsidy would be used only if needed for the debt service and operating expenses. So that means if they run into a deficit, I don't know if the White Sox have run into a deficit in the last few years.
Well, I don't know if a stated authority would run into a deficit.
Let me stick an elbow in here and make room for a Wichita Arrows baseball fan.
All right, listen,
Dave Everson.
I'm taking off my political science hat now. I'm putting on my stadium hat here. One of the things I think that is characteristic is that parks designed primarily for one sport are not necessarily good for the viewers of another sport. And I think that's particularly true with respect to baseball and football.
Okay.
I think Kansas City has kind of the ideal sort of situation that Chicago might look at, and that is next to each other, they have the Royals baseball stadium and the Kansas City Chiefs football stadium.
With shared parking.
With shared parking, yeah. And it seems to work very well. And I agree with Mary Frances. It's kind of unfortunate, I think, that these things are being looked at one at a time rather than trying to figure out what the best comprehensive package might be for the city.
But I think Craig is right about the competition that's been historic and traditional.
Oh, yeah.
Traditional
oh, yeah.
City of Chicago.
One of the pervasive things about this is that it ties in with a larger argument that's made about industry in Illinois generally, and that is that since we have been recruiting companies from outside the state, indeed outside the nation, Japanese car makers and the like, a lot of people have said, well, why don't we use some state support to sustain industries that have some capital needs in our own state? And so this plays into that. I think that the White Sox can play into the larger argument of economic development that was raised earlier.
But the question that I think we're going to hear lawmakers ask before the end of the year is, you know, but really, are we bailing out a sports team? I mean, we're not talking that many jobs, relatively speaking. It's not like a new industry. It's not like a new auto plant or something like that.
Back to horse racing.
Before we go to horse racing, I have an additional question. I'm enough of a sentimentalist that I begin wondering about what happened. You know, if all this comes to pass, a new stadium for the White Sox and for the Cubs and for the Bears, what happens to traditions in Chicago like Comiskey Park, Wrigley Field, Soldier Field? What happens to those facilities?
Well, I think that's one of the things that some people will say will be a shame and we're losing our heritage, and others will say that's progress. The bottom line is that nothing lasts forever, and I think these places have served their teams well, but they're all kind of getting on in years, and you can keep shoring up the walls and trying to make improvements only for so long.
Well, there's more than football that goes along with Soldier Field, for example.
Indeed.
Wasn't that one of the centers for the Manhattan Project back during World War II?
Well, I don't. That's a little before my time.
I thought that was at the University of Chicago at Stagg Field.
Yeah. But I think some of the activity was actually done in the basement of Soldier Field.
There are some other activities.
Rich, you're older than we are.
We won't say how much, though. But there are some other activities that go on there. A lot of high school, the high school football championships are played there.
First, the city of Chicago?
The city,
yeah, downstate they play in Normal.
Yeah, and... there are also, I think, the cheerleader championships go on there, and it gives people a big thrill to play, to do Soldier Field. There's some concerts there. But the bottom line is these things are going to take place somewhere, and people will go to wherever those things are.
What's the status of the, you know, the flirtation with putting one or more of the stadiums out in the suburbs? What have the political interests realized about that?
I think the political interests said, we don't want a stadium in Addison, thank you. And that's why we're seeing the effort to rebuild in Chicago.
Well, if it's a given, they're going to do it. Earlier in the program, Craig said it boils down to how they're going to do it. So why don't we address that issue? If we assume they are going to do it, how are they going to do it now?
Well, they're going to create a 7-member stadium authority, which will sell $120 million worth of construction bonds. There will be... The White Sox will rent the stadium for $4 million a year. I think the sale of concessions and maybe the skybox rentals will also go in to pay off the bonded indebtedness after the thing is constructed. It's going to be built south of Comiskey Park along the Dan Ryan in what is now parking and residential neighborhoods. What else can I say? I'm trying to think.
Well,
I don't have
hotel,
bonds will be paid by... a 2% hotel motel tax in the city of Chicago, which will increase the tax to about 12%, Craig?
It is about 10% now. It would become 12%, making it one of the highest hotel motel taxes in the country.
And then a $10 million annual subsidy will be available if necessary, 5 from the city and 5 from the state.
To be used simultaneously.
If necessary to pay off the debt service and to cover operating costs.
How can that kind of encumbrance be laid upon future General Assemblies?
Oh, Rich, we do it all the time.
Craig, how does this play into Mayor Washington's situation? He seemed to be claiming it as a personal victory. He was the negotiator in behalf of the city and had a deal with the governor. How does that play into the spring contest that we're looking for now?
I think this issue jumps right into his hands, and I think that is where it has picked up some opposition, albeit very quiet opposition. You're not hearing this kind of stuff talked about publicly, but privately, a number of lawmakers are grumbling about it. You don't see the council wars of Chicago transported to Springfield all that often. You're seeing it in this case behind the scenes, because I think there are some people who are allied with Edward Verdoliak, who the Cook County Democratic chairman and the mayor's nemesis, who fear that they may be helping to reelect Harold Washington, and that is a problem for them.
Are we talking about people like, maybe Al Ronan or... somebody like that in the legislature?
I think we may have the Ronins, the Carrolls, and others, people who are closely allied with the Democratic regulars in Chicago.
Well, earlier, Bill Miller was chomping at the bit to talk about horse racing.
I think he's falling asleep over here.
Well, I have a personal interest in that I have a daughter living in Arlington Heights, and I'm hearing rumors.
Oh, I thought maybe you owned a horse or a racing horse or something.
I'm hearing my horse is still running. I'm hearing rumors that maybe that racetrack will be rebuilt at Arlington.
It will be. I think because the state wouldn't give Mr. Dutchessois enough financial incentives for him to want to rebuild his track in Old Mill Creek in Lake County, and then put up a business and residential development down in the side of his existing track.
Yeah. So what's wrong with rebuilding Arlington Park?
Nothing, really. I think that the draw originally for the legislature was that Mr. Duchossois envisioned this two-site Valhalla extravaganza of a facility. There would be the racetrack and other things for about $600 million in Old Mill Creek, and then there would be complex in Arlington Heights, and that this whole package was going to be $1.3 billion. So far, it looks like the legislature didn't want to buy into that, but could see rebuilding the track where it stands.
Is there a feeling among some legislators that he has gotten his back up and demanded more than what should have been given?
I think that that's not only a feeling, that seems to be a fact. The impression I get from conversations overheard with some of the owners of the six other racetracks in the state was basically that Richard Duchossois, the Arlington Park owner, controlled the negotiations. They are along for the ride because whatever he gets, they get a lot of, and so they're going to do better no matter what. But Richard Duchossois's demands did play a big key in
but
this.
But put it into perspective, am I not correct, Craig, that his assets in Arlington Park, well, we have a message from on high, his assets in Arlington Park are greater than the assets of all the other tracks combined.
Oh, not only that, and he is also the only track owner who must rebuild his facility. So his point is, and it was taken to be, that he is going to have to invest $120 million thereabouts in the state, and that he should be able to realize some kind of return on that.
Mary Frances, will you be able to go somewhere in Springfield to a betting parlor and put $2 on the sixth and the ninth race?
Well, I would presume so. The racing package would allow, you call it inter-track wagering, you call it off-track betting. I think it's the same thing, only the distinction that can be made is that you will allow parlors, betting parlors, to be set up at 14 sites throughout Illinois. They will be controlled by existing tracks. It won't be like private operators are controlling these betting parlors. They will be controlled by the tracks that are already in operation.
They're, in effect, a franchise outlet?
Right. Well,
McRacing.
McRacing.
I like that.
There's a distance limit on them. If you're in the Chicago area, the betting parlors have to be within 90 miles of the existing tracks, and I think
135 miles.
135 miles.
So what we could see is Fairmont in Collinsville or the East Metro East area were deciding to put two inter-track wagering parlors in a location that's around Collinsville, and I would think they wouldn't want to put one right next door in Belleville. I think they would want to come up to Springfield. And then you could see the Quad City Downs building in Peoria, and you could see Arlington building in Rockford. I don't know if Champaign would get one or not.
Was Springfield close enough to get betting parlors for all our tracks?
There are seven existing tracks, and each will get to put up two parlors. So you'd have one in Springfield and one someplace else that would be controlled by Fairmont. One in Peoria and one someplace else controlled by the Quad City Downs.
What if a guy in Springfield wanted to bet on a horse race in Chicago?
Well, you could do that. You can do that.
You would watch the races televised, and there's a difference there. There's another Duchossois influence in the negotiations that during the Arlington Park meet, if you bet on a race that's being televised at your parlor in Springfield or wherever, an Arlington Park race, if you win, you will pay a 5% surcharge on a winning bet, 2.5% of which will go to Richard Duchossois, and the other 2.5% would go to the local government. If any other racetrack, you will pay only a 2.5% surcharge, which will go to the local government.
Well, where does the state get its cut?
From the pari-mutuel tax.
Which is reduced
from the betting pool.
Which is being reduced, so.
Well, I'm better on baseball questions, Bradley.
But is off-track betting considered a part of the pari-mutuel?
No, and where the state will get its cut on the off-track betting will be from the $2 entry fee, I believe, when you go into the parlors. At first, that was supposed to have been a $4 fee, but enough squawking from the track owners and some lawmakers cut that down to $2, but the state will pick up some money from that.
So it's kind of like a cover charge.
Yeah.
It's a cover charge. They don't want vagrants to go sleep in those parlors.
Like they do in New York.
Well, now, how does the local operator get his money?
Concessions?
And I'm not sure.
I guess concessions, and it's also a part of, you know, it's Fairmont people up here running the track. I'm guessing. I mean, because Fairmont's the closest. I don't think
Fairmont employees.
Yeah, okay. I would think so. And I think it's just an extension. The more, they get a share of bets at some point.
Right.
I mean,
they don't turn over all the bets. They only turn over part of them. So they'll still take in a good deal from the handle.
Yeah.
Okay, have we adequately covered those two?
I do want to raise one other issue and play devil's advocate here, and that is that I sense from some lawmakers the feeling that with these sports bills, both the racing and the stadium bills, we are basically bankrolling people who are rich enough to do all of this on their own, and while we have people in the state who are asking for cost of living increases for public aid and being told there's not enough money, here we are giving millions to multimillionaires. And, I wonder if people are really seeing that that's what's going on here.
Well, I think that's the argument, as you've indicated, that we're hearing from people wondering, why are we doing this? But as Senator Don Clark Netsch said, in regards to the White Sox bill, you know, I've seen us do things in the name of economic development before that were more outrageous than this. At least we can, you know, we can see a return in a sense of, and we see the benefits of making sure a major baseball team stays in the state.
Yeah, wouldn't there be a parallel with, they're saying that the lottery proceeds go into the education fund? Why don't the legislators insist that part of the proceeds from this go into, say, social services?
Well,
fund?
Because you're already taking the proceeds from this and dividing it up into a lot of different places anyway,
but not, fund. Yeah, sure, but.
I hear them also arguing that they're serving their constituents who want access to these things. That is to say, the state is providing circuses just like the Romans did a couple thousand years ago. Yeah.
Well, Craig, if Jack and Dave and I decided to go together into business, went to the legislature, how successful would we be in getting some money to build a big football stadium here and get the Indianapolis Colts over to Springfield?
how good a friend are you of Governor Thompson's?
I'm being about half facetious.
I know. I'm only being half facetious there. I think a lot of it has had to do with who knows who down here, who you can get on your side. You could do it.
Isn't that the old story? It's not how much you know, it's who you know.
You got it.
When are you going to try that, Rich? Let me know.
Well, the thought, I'm just sitting here. But
yeah, I want to buy some options on that.
Yeah.
None of us are millionaires, so maybe, you know.
I know some people
maybe
are looking.
Maybe we could get Rich to sponsor the World's Fair.
Yeah, I know some people who are looking for something to do with their money because they had bought options at Old Mill Creek. We've been hearing people canceling their options on that site.
Well, there has been talk about a racetrack in the Springfield area before.
Sherman.
You know, don't forget, this racing bill will also allow pari-mutuel racing in DuCoin at the
How about at the State Fair in Springfield?
Well, I would think that would be down the line at some point, yes. I don't know if the bill includes it or not.
That's all part of the effort by the state Department of Agriculture, I bet, to entice the Hamiltonian back to
Illinois. Yeah, they want the Hamiltonian back here.
And there's the beguiling aspect that is that these are revenue producers for the state, not just in the sense of more business activity, but because there are special taxes on lotteries and gambling and in this case pari-mutuel, and now extending to off track. It's one of those easy revenues because the people come in to pay it themselves. They volunteer to come in and wager, so the state gets its share.
Voluntary taxation.
Yeah. Well, I'm surprised this off track betting business is going to go through the House. I thought Mike Madigan was always opposed to that sort of thing.
Well, again, it really technically is not considered off-track betting. It's expanded inter-track betting, wagering, or teletrack.
A rose is a rose.
Did the dog?
No, dogs aren't barking this week. No, I don't know exactly why.
Somebody kept the dogs in the kennel for some reason, and I heard some whines from them last night, but they were told to sit and stay.
I wonder where the religious community is on this issue. In other words, usually when something like this pops up, there are ministerial alliances pop into Springfield, and argue that you're catering to the poor people who need the money for other things.
Well, they've been focusing that kind of activity, directing their attention toward the state lottery.
Yeah. I think this was one of those fastballs that whizzed right past them, to use another sports analogy.
I was going
to
say a slam dunk.
Yeah.
Well, with the time remaining, we've been talking about things that had nothing whatsoever to do with the fall veto session.
But fun things.
When was the last time vetoes were important in the fall veto session?
Thanks.
Well, how much money has the legislature added back
we're
to,
not sure
to the
yet.
Fiscal?
Well, we're not sure yet. I mean, all the numbers haven't been tallied yet.
Roughly.
Oh. Well, who's running the calculator?
We were up to 32 by Wednesday.
But that was one chamber, though.
Yeah, and I think we heard the Senate puts some more money back in, a few million more. So we're probably hovering, I don't know, I guess between 30 and 50.
No, I'm not sure.
You can never be sure because they have to go back and forth between the two houses.
Right. I mean, we've seen one. After the first week of the veto session, they were $32-plus million over budget, over what the governor had cut out of the budget in July. But since both chambers have to approve budget reapproves or overrides, I'm not sure. There's still bills that are pending.
Well, one issue the legislature did override the governor on that kind of surprised me a bit, and that was this bill demanding or requiring oral proficiency among professors.
In English.
In English, yes.
I think that was a good one.
I was surprised to see the legislature come back and override that veto. I thought once the governor vetoed it, they'd leave it alone. But in fact, they didn't. It is now state law.
I think it's something their constituency wanted, period.
Well, we have a couple of professors on the panel. What do you think, Jack and Dave? has state government started down the wrong path here?
Well, I think that, as was said, the constituent types of interests are such that that's good legislation. The irony here is that it probably could have been accomplished a number of ways and didn't really need bill, but it I think the academic community has to say, hey, the people have spoken on this rather dogmatically, so get your house in order. It's a problem to the universities because faculty are recruited to do a lot of things, certainly including teaching as a primary responsibility, but a good many foreign scholars have been part of the American scene for a long time and contribute a great deal to research and public service. And sometimes there have been people who didn't speak that effectively, and that's offensive to students.
The argument was made that Albert Einstein could not have taught in Illinois universities. This had been in effect.
There are a number of distinguished people with whom students sometimes have difficulties. There's no question about the fact that that's true.
You know, what's to say that if you've got a professor who's teaching something who may be foreign-born or have a foreign accent, that there's not a TA or an assistant in there also trying to help these help these students who are having problems understanding?
Well, I'm going to go even further than that. I don't think the bill will be effective at all because I think its aim, although it was denied, was at people who have accents. But as one of the lawmakers pointed out, he had a teacher who was born and raised in Scotland, who spoke perfect English, knew the language perfectly, but had a thick Scottish accent. And he said he was the most unintelligible teacher he ever had. This bill would not cover him. He's proficient in English.
Have you ever wondered what was going on in the first 5 minutes of a British movie?
Huh?
Say that again.
Well, you know, if you come into a British movie or there's a strong Cockney accent, you have trouble picking it up for the first 5 minutes. Mm-hmm. I'm agreeing.
Yeah, you're not going to be able to, under this law, you cannot put those people out, yet those are the people that probably are the ones you're really talking about.
Well, I'm not sure. My guess is that this bill results from teaching assistants. And that's just a conjecture on my part. I'm talking about students now who have come to the university from other countries who are then employed as teaching assistants and may have some problems with the language. I think legislation was probably not the way to deal with this problem, but it's just kind of like sending a signal, I think.
Yeah. And our time, David, has gone on this program. Thanks to our panel members, Dave Everson and Jack Vanderslick, in the studio with me. In our State House studio, Bill Miller, Mary Frances Fagan, and special thanks to Craig Delavore of WBBM Chicago. I'm Rich Bradley.
You've been listening to the program State Week in Review, produced in Springfield by Public Radio 92, WSSR.